I'm Heidi Holt, and you're listening to Culturology on Northern Community Radio. The story of Finns in Minnesota is told in a great new book published by the Minnesota Historical Society. The author is Arnold Allenin. He's a professor emeritus of landscape history at the University of Wisconsin, and he's a third-generation Finnish Minnesotan. He spoke with Scott Hall about the first generations of Finnish immigrants that left a cultural legacy that remains strong in Minnesota today.
The very first ones who came, interestingly enough, were from the far northern reaches of the Nordic world. And actually, those Finns had emigrated earlier to northern Norway when there were some very difficult conditions in Finland because of famines and otherwise. And they went to the rich fishing grounds and to some of the copper mines of northern Norway. Very few of them, but nevertheless, they accompanied Norwegians who emigrated then in 1864. I should add, a little bit more diversity to this, there also were people from the Swedish side of the border who were Finns. Before 1809, when Finland was part of Sweden, there was no border between the two countries. And that area at the far northern reaches of the country had a permeable border. People just went back and forth between Finland and Sweden. And many of those who then were left on the Swedish side after the Russian takeover of Finland in 1809 stayed as Finns. And they spoke Finnish and were very much Finnish representatives as well. So there were those two groups, three, Finnish-speaking Norwegians, Finnish-speaking Swedes, and then, of course, some from Finland as well. And they were the ones who began coming in 1864. And until about 1870 or 72, most of them came from that region. By the 1870s, though, America fever had affected all of Finland, and people began coming from the mainstream areas of the country.
Let's talk a little more about the factors that led them to emigrate. You mentioned some famine, starvation. There were some hard times in all of Scandinavia. Tell us more about those factors.
Yes. Even though health conditions were improving in Finland during the 19th century, there was a very serious famine during the 1860s. When thousands and thousands of Finns died. And that certainly did spawn some of the immigration, but even more important was just simply the economic conditions that Finns faced. Only the oldest son would inherit the farm. Families were getting larger as health conditions improved, which meant that there was this so-called surplus population. And they often would have to roam the countryside going from one farm to another as landless peasants. And it's no wonder then that the opportunities of America really attracted so many of them. So economic reasons were the primary one. But then there were other issues, too. Of course, there would be things like the disintegration of marriages, problems within the family. And then we can't forget political factors that began to play a role in the 1890s when the Russianization of Finland became even more intense. Young Finnish males were threatened with conscription in the Russian army, so that caused many to leave during the early 20th century, too. So it spans a number of reasons from 1864 till about 1914, but economic ones were certainly prevalent, and then political ones becoming more evident in the later period.
We're speaking with Arnold Allenin about his new book, Finns in Minnesota, published by the Minnesota Historical Society. And Arnold, I got out a map of Scandinavia as I read your book because I was trying to place some of the places the Finnish immigrants came from, including the islands off the southwest coast of Finland. But there's one people I want to ask you about that is overlooked often, and I don't know if there is a lot of records of their coming here. It'd be the Sami people of the far north. Who were they?
Yes, they were a separate group, and actually they were the indigenous people of Finland and the Nordic world before the Finns actually began to push them farther north. And they come originally from Asia, but they had settled in this part of Finland long, long ago. And they are a small group, and now they're relatively small, of course, but it's estimated that about 30,000 of them emigrated altogether from Europe. That would be from Norway, Sweden, and Finland. In fact, the largest number came from Norway, smallest number from Finland. But we just have no real good idea of how many there were because they never listed their origins as Sami on any of the records. They just simply stated where they were born. And they often chose not to do it even because they felt they could experience discrimination from the other groups in the New World.
So they also experienced some discrimination back in Scandinavia too, I guess. So they
yes, there certainly would have been in terms of taking land and that. In some ways, not quite as seriously, but they are somewhat similar to the Native American issues that were faced in the United States and Canada.
Aha, uh-huh, okay. Well, now we have the Finn Swedes, we have the Finn Norwegians, and the Finns of Finland. Was it mainly language that they were able to sustain their separate identity as Finns, or what contributed to that when they were in Sweden and Norway?
Yes, it certainly was language. Those Finns who did live in, those first generation ones who lived in Sweden and Finland, certainly maintained their language. In fact, some of them never did even learn the lingua franca or the language of their own, of the place where they lived. And there's no doubt that one reason Finns were so prone to maintain their language is because it's not an Indo-European language, as are English and the other Nordic languages and German and others. But it's Finno-Ugric. It has some relationship to Hungarian and Estonian. But it's very difficult, especially for uneducated, relatively uneducated Finns of the 19th century, to learn another language because the grammatical structure and the vocabulary are just so totally different from the Indo-European language.
And you have a great little anecdote in the book about Finglish, the Finnish English that kind of sprouted here in America. Tell us about that.
Yes. Just about every nationality group has adopted English language words and then put them into their own grammatical framework. But in Finnish, it's so unique because you have a different sort of language altogether. So the Finns would take a word like car, and then they would call it kara, which is the English word like kara, but then they would put a Finnish ending on it. Or then there were words like bedroom. It became petiruma. And so if you just go on and on, the words like to mine is mainata. So it is a very interesting language, and it was only understandable to the Finns of North America because certainly their neighbors in the United States and Canada couldn't understand it. But what's so interesting is when they went back to visit in Finland, the people there just were totally befuddled as well when they started speaking Finglish.
Yeah, that's great. And I see you have a road sign in Finland from someone who came to America and went back, and they lived in Duluth, and the sign says Tuluti. It was a road named after Duluth. And
yes, it's Tuluttintie, Duluth Road.
That's cool.
And this was a Finnish blacksmith who came from the town of Alajärvi, which is in west central Finland. Spent a few years in Duluth, and he went back to Alajärvi and established his blacksmith shop there, and he called it Tulutti, which is Duluth. Mm-hmm. And then when a road was connected to the blacksmith shop, the village there named it Tuluttintie, which is Duluth Road.
Okay, the first Finns arriving here moved into south central Minnesota counties, Wright County, Renville County, and they wanted a homestead and farm for the most part, would you say?
Oh, definitely. And I should add, too, that most of those Finns who came at that time were Lestadian or Apostolic Lutherans. And they were a very conservative group, but very rural-oriented, and they did not want to live in the city, if at all possible. So moving to farms was just their primary objective by far. So rural life was very much a way of Finns ever since they first arrived here.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that they were very conservative and religious, because a lot of our current image of Finns has to do with their organizing in the mines and kind of what they called Red Finns back 100 years ago. Gus Hall, of course, was the Communist Party USA candidate for president. He's from Cherry. One quote you have in the book says, "Nothing more clearly speaks to the diverse views of Minnesota Finns than politics." Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, those first Finns who came again were rural and very religious, a very conservative religious group. Later, though, the Finns who began arriving from the 1890s onward, these were the ones who had been primarily ostracized or at least subjected to greater Russianization by the Tsar. And their attitudes and activities course, being anti-czarist, were often then fueled by socialism, which was, and communism, which was also brewing in, of course, the parts of Europe as well, and especially in Finland when they were right adjacent to Russia. So that meant that there would be many of them who were politicized and then came over here as well. But what was even perhaps more interesting is that there was a group of Finnish intellectuals, leftist intellectuals, who fled Finland as well because of their anti-czarist views. And they brought a lot of the intellectual ideas and to the New World and established newspapers, which then were read avidly by leftist-leaning Finns throughout the region. And because Finns were so literate, they had all learned, basically 98 or 99% of them, at least knew the rudiments of reading and writing. So when they could, when they had the facility to do so, they could read these newspapers and, of course, become very familiar with the nuances of the political left, especially. I still find that extremely fascinating when we have these peasants and just ordinary workers coming from the old world, and then they become so sophisticated in terms of understanding the nuances of politics. You know, I think today there'd be very few people who could understand what is the difference between social democrats, industrial unionists, and communists.
Of course, they lived through all that history, and the immigrant experience, whether they were leftists or conservative, miners, loggers, or homesteaders, this was a real life of hardship for the first couple of generations of immigrants, like most immigrant groups, a very difficult life.
No doubt it was. Of course, one thing that made it more difficult, I suppose, in terms of the total number of Finns in Minnesota, is that when they arrived, there was very little good land left anymore. Only those who came in the 1860s and 70s were fortunate enough to be able to acquire good farmland in south central Minnesota and in the western areas. The vast majority, if they wanted to become farmers, had to work in the much more difficult area of northeastern Minnesota, the so-called cutover region. And here they certainly did face a great deal of hardship because of the difficult conditions. But yet they were culturally pre-adapted for it. They didn't come to the region because it looked like Finland. That's one of the popular myths that is promulgated. But they came when they got here, they were able to deal with it because they had faced and encountered similar environmental situations in Finland.
One of the things I like about the Minnesota Historical Society's People of Minnesota series, in this case Arnold Allenon's Finns of Minnesota, is each of these books has personal accounts, personal histories that you can really get insights into the lives of individuals. And your choice was to take Fred Torma and his family. Fred lived in the late 19th century through he died in 1979. And he seemed to embody that cooperative spirit of northeastern Minnesota that we are most familiar with now. Tell us about Fred and his family.
Yes, my family and his family were quite familiar, even though they didn't live close together. But he was one of the most active and humane individuals from that first generation that I've ever known or ever heard about. He was just totally committed to what the Finns called yhteishyvä, or the common good. And he immediately, when he came here, he said in his interview that he had been exposed to the principles of socialism, and he brought them to Minnesota. And wherever he would go, he would attempt to establish a cooperative or a hall or something that would promote this common good of his fellow Finns. He was a carpenter by trade. He worked as a miner part-time, but he devoted so much of his time just to these activities that would further the cause of Finns, as well as people throughout northeastern Minnesota. And when I looked at his schedule once, there were Finnish halls throughout the Finnish areas of Minnesota. He was very active in the one in Nashwauk, as was his wife. But he was active there every evening of the week doing something. So he was just totally committed to the cause.
So Arnold, tell us a little about your family history here in northern Minnesota.
Yes, my origins, I was actually born in the Finnish Triangle, as it's called, which is in west-central Minnesota, in Wadena County, in Minaga, which is one of the real centers of Finnish life in Minnesota. But my parents then eventually moved to northeastern Minnesota, where my maternal grandparents had established a farm. right on the Aiken County, Carlton County line. And so when I was 8 years old, we moved there, and I suddenly was put into the heart of a real Finnish community where there were still many Finnish immigrants residing, and Finnish activities occurred regularly. So that's where I was immersed in Finnish culture and language. And because my grandparents were still living, too, and very hale and hearty, they hadn't learned English very well. So when I arrived, it meant that I had to learn Finnish if I were going to be able to communicate with them. So I learned this very ancient form of Finnish, 19th century Finnish, because they were born in that time. But then eventually, when I went on to the University of Minnesota and then to the University of Helsinki, I took classes in Finnish where I could cleanse the Finnish a bit and make it a little bit more modern and learn something about grammar as well and how to read it, too.
You mentioned, as is so common with the immigrant experience, the second, third, fourth generations of immigrants, most of them don't participate or get immersed in the culture. You call it kind of a disengagement. Tell us about how you would describe the status of the Finnish communities here in northern Minnesota now.
Yes, that's really an interesting question. Of course, the first generation, the immigrant generation, was that they were very active typically, and even their children were. Second generation Finnish Americans were really quite stolid in their participation in events and activities that their immigrant parents had formed. But once it gets to the third generation, and I'm a third generation person, for example, we are really thoroughly Americanized by then. But one thing that why I really felt necessary to write this book, and why I think third generation people have an advantage, is that they are the last group that really knows the immigrant generation very well, but they also understand the United States and America too. So some of us have find it intriguing to discover that and to try to understand it, but the majority really get caught up more in American activities and even lose their total awareness of maybe what their origins were. Right now, it's more of a social and cultural phenomenon. I think the activities that Finnish American descendants find most interesting would be the music, which is really something that binds people together. Other activities of a social nature, there's an annual event called FinFest. Every summer it goes to a different part of the United States, and thousands of people come to those, but yet that's not even close to a large representation of the total community. So I think it's more social and cultural activities. Certainly the idea of what the Finns did in terms of politics and establishing cooperatives and that, those elements are basically lost.
And Arnold, in your chapter on Finnish Swedes, there's a wonderful picture of the Palisade Mississippi Valley Rose Temperance Society Orchestral Ensemble that played in Palisade area from 1904 to 1917. And that's just one of the charming aspects of Finns in Minnesota. It's a wonderful book, Arnold, and I think people like myself who aren't Finnish will really enjoy not only the immigrant story, but the tour of Minnesota and the communities that where Finns settled. Arnold, it's been a pleasure to visit with you about the Finns in Minnesota, and we look forward to you visiting northern Minnesota. I understand you come up from time to time.
Right, and by the way, I'll be making presentations at the Petrel Hall by Brimson over the Labor Day weekend, and then I'll be presenting on Silver Bay at their library on the Wednesday after Labor Day. All and right. I'll even be venturing out to New York Mills if anybody is listening from that area.
Yeah, great. All right, Arnold. Well, we've just kind of touched the surface of Finnish history in Minnesota, so thanks.
Right. And as we say, nekemin.
Nekemin, yakulamin. Arnold Allanen and his book, Finns in Minnesota, is out now. It's published by the Minnesota Historical Society. I'm sure it's going to be in bookstores all over northern Minnesota, if it isn't already. If you want more information about the book, you can go to the Minnesota Historical Society website or give us a call, 326-1234, 800-662-5799.
No Amerikan polokan tahtia, ei sitä kaikki tairakkaa. Ja Amerikan polokan tahtia, ei sitä kaikki tairakkaa. Joka ei taira polokan tahtia, ei sitä likkaa nairakkaa. Joka ei taira polokan tahtia, ei sitä likkaa nairakkaa. Ja ollaanhan vaan iloisia, kun ne meillä on surua. Ollaanhan vaan iloisia, kun ne meillä on surua. eikä joka pojan vierestä haro aikaa kulua.
Eikä joka pojan vierestä haro aikaa kulua.